Well, hey there. Welcome to the Green Divas Radio Show. I'm your host, Green Diva Meg, and I have an inspiring show for you today. So before I tell you about all the fun stuff on the show, I just want to remind you to please check out thegreendivas.com. We have some new posts, new content there, including a recipe that I devised, a farro salad for my hubby, and he said it was a keeper, so I decided to write it down for you all. And let's connect on social media, folks. I'm starting to get into Twitter a little more. So find me at Green Diva Meg on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, of course, as Green Diva Meg. And The Green Divas at The Green Divas for Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And also YouTube. I'm really getting into making these funny little short 30-second or 1-minute tutorials, and hopefully they're useful. I'm getting a lot of reaction with them now, a lot of good positive responses, and a lot of people picking them up. So please subscribe. That helps us out, and hopefully you'll be entertained and informed. So on this week's show, we've got Rev Yearwood. He's the president and CEO of Hip Hop Caucus. He's a minister, a community activist, and he makes an appearance in the Hip Hop Caucus's People's Climate Music. They do a wonderful video called Trouble in the Water. You'll hear a small bit of that, about a minute of it, just prior to my interview with Rev Yearwood. So enjoy that. And in the meantime, you can look for this, the full tune and the full video, on YouTube or Facebook. Again, that's Trouble in the Water, starring Common. I really was very inspired by both the music and Rev Yearwood. Other great segments include a new Green Divas Heart Wildlife with John Platt, who's been doing the Extinction Countdown series. This week, we are talking about birds. Get your June garden to-dos with Green Diva Alley, and listen to a replay of Traveling Green Divas with Alice Ford, who has some great ideas for finding green accommodations as you make your summer travel plans. Also, get eco-sexy with Green Diva Brigitte Mars as she offers ideas for food and herbs that help get us in the mood. So get in the mood to listen to this great show, and I look forward to sharing the next almost hour with you.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections.
The world's forests absorb about 2.4 billion tons of carbon dioxide each year, and that's equivalent to about a third of the carbon dioxide released by burning fossil fuels.
That's Paul Trianoski, Chief Conservation Officer at the Sustainable Forestry Initiative. Unfortunately, forests, these amazing sponges that soak up carbon, are increasingly vulnerable to insects and disease as the climate changes. Warmer temperatures, changes in rainfall, and droughts all take a toll. Preventing deforestation and restoring damaged forests are therefore more critical than ever. Trianoski says sustainable forest management is also key. Thinning forests can prevent overcrowding and reduce disease, and prescribed burns can support healthy forests by clearing out excessive underbrush and allowing native vegetation to grow back. By protecting trees and forests, we can help reduce global warming. And that's not all.
Forests contribute to the benefits and values that we all care about every day, things like clean water and clean air, wildlife habitat, and just quality of life. All of those things are contributed to by well-managed and healthy forests.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Wishing you had a green thumb, or want to learn more about sustainable gardening outdoors and in? Expert Green Divas and Dude Gardeners share tips for everything from composting to growing herbs in your kitchen. Listen to the Green Divas Green Thumb for low-stress gardening tips. Yay! Green Diva Alley.
Hi, Meg.
How
are you? Congratulations on making it to June.
Yes, and I've finally started playing in my gardens, and I have thought of you as I play with my peonies, and I was weeding things out. My boxwood did bite the dust, though, a couple of them, not all of them.
Well, that's good. You have an opportunity there to plant something different or plant the same thing, but that's not too bad.
Exactly.
We took out a lot of ours because we decided we just couldn't put up with the way they looked since they were in the front garden.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now, so today you're going to talk about some timely things that can be done and should be done in June.
A few things, other than enjoying everything that's in bloom, which is just so fantastic. I'm going to limit this to three things, which are the really important things to do at this time of year.
Okay.
The first thing to do is to plant your tomatoes. Yay!
I've got some in.
That's good. Tomatoes, all your warm season things, melons, cucumbers, peppers, eggplant, corn, okra.
Now, are you talking, you're not talking about from seed, though, probably from seedlings, you know, small plants?
Well, I usually plant my tomatoes from seedlings because I can find what I need around here.
Yeah.
But you could have started some seedlings, and depending on where you are, if you have enough days, you might be able to start some from seed. But you can definitely plant corn and peppers and cucumbers and melons from seed.
Okay, so there's enough time. There's enough time to do that. Oh, okay.
There's plenty of time now. So this is, I just keep saying tomatoes every other word because I love to eat them in season. So I know everyone else does too. The other thing you can do that's related to that is you can plant your tropicals now. So you can plant your dahlias and your tuberous begonias and your caladiums and your elephant ears. And you can bring your houseplants outside.
Yes.
If you carefully water them and keep them shaded.
Yeah.
And those will give you a lot of things to bloom in August when other things are tired. And the last thing, and really important to do, is to shear your hedges now, especially if they're blooming hedges, because you want to get the blooms, you want to get the, shear them before they set their flowers for next year.
Yeah.
And you also want to divide any spring flowering bulbs that you have. All those daffodils that bloomed, you can dig them up, spread them apart, and they will multiply much faster for you, and so will your other spring flowering bulbs.
Oh, that's a good idea. See, I never thought of doing that, like right after they bloom, and I think that is a good idea.
And then you can use that rock to mark the spot again, so.
Yeah, right. So
those are wonderful additional things to do. You're going to be planting. You're still going to be doing all that other basic stuff, but I think if you do a little bit now, you'll have a happier August and even next spring.
Excellent. Well, that's wonderful, and I know you'll have a really thorough post with lots of great information as well on the Green Divas, so I really appreciate the reminder. There's a couple things that I need to get out there and do.
That's right. Schedule them.
Schedule them in, man. Thanks, Allie.
Thanks, Vic.
Inspired to grow more organic stuff? We are. To learn more about this Green Divas Green Thumb episode and all kinds of other great green information, visit thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com.
I'm Ed Begley, and you're listening to the Green Divas Radio Show, the entertaining source for low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green and take action for the Earth.
Green Divas Heart Wildlife. Who can resist all those videos and images of adorable baby animals? But sometimes these adorable creatures really need our help. Let's celebrate wild animals, learn about them, and do what we can to help them. Yes, back again with my favorite green dude, environmental journalist, John Platt, who's really focused on Extinction Countdown. That's his series with Scientific American, talking about endangered species, the good, the not so good, and, you know, everything we need to know. And there's so many species and types of animals that are in this realm. So we're kind of just kind of talking about, you know, we talked about turtles and tigers, and I think today we're going to talk about birds.
Birds.
And lots of birds. But there were a couple of bird articles that triggered my thought on this. So, you know, what's the latest on birds in general? Is there anything that stands out?
Well, you know, birds are a great conservation icon because they're so visible for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, bird watching is an enormous industry and a great hobby, and people love it. And there are so many birds that we never see.
Yeah.
You know, whether they're just not in North America, or maybe they're nocturnal,
right,
or maybe they like to hide, or maybe there aren't that many of them, so you don't see them in the first place. But they're a great way to talk about all kinds of environmental issues, and people really respond to them.
Well, I know we had done a couple of stories with a woman who made a Songbird SOS, a film about songbirds, you know, rapidly, you know, declining. And then that's certainly one issue. And there's a lot of factors involved with that. But, yeah, there wasn't any particularly good news with that. Oh, my God. But, and you had an interesting piece about these rare Scottish birds that are going blind, and of course everybody probably was assuming it was an environmental factor, but what you found out was it's really not.
Yeah, it's called the red-billed chow, and chows in general are a fairly wide-ranging group of species, and red-billed sparrows are among them. They have a fairly wide range, but there's a subspecies that lives only in Scotland. And they're genetically isolated from everyone else. And a few years ago, people started noticing that a lot of them were being born effectively blind. Their eyes were cloudy. They couldn't see. And therefore, you know, if you can't see by the time you get out of the nest, you can't survive.
Yeah.
And there were theories that maybe it was an environmental factor. You know, maybe there was some sort of chemical or toxin in the environment that was causing this to happen. Well, we now know the answer, and it's actually a direct result of them having such a tiny population. There are only about 60 breeding pairs, and when you get a population that low, if there's a genetic mutation, it has the opportunity to perpetuate itself throughout the population, and that's what's happening. There is a mutation that is causing this lethal blindness in about 3% of the birds when they're born. And that even though there are a lot of efforts out there to protect their habitat and keep the species going, this is a major stumbling block.
Well, yeah. It's amazing to me. I've never really even heard of, you know, blind birds. It's an interesting study now on genetics rather than an environmental issue, which, you know, for once, it's not necessarily our fault.
Why is their population so low in the first place? It's because they destroyed their habitat and isolated them from other breeding populations.
Mm.
So the blindness might not be specifically our fault, but humans did cause it in the long run, if you look at the long, long part of the story.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We'll have to own that. And what about like these bird die-offs? Every once in a while you read a story where, like, you know, lots of birds just basically fall out of the sky and die.
It happens.
Okay.
I haven't written about that too many times.
Oh, okay.
But we've seen, you know, there can be diseases or things like that, or environmental factors. And whether or not those are going to have a massive impact on a species level, it happens. I mean, one of the other things, though, is a lot of migrating birds travel over areas where there's hunting. And you see that in Malta, where there's just rampant bird hunting, and it's, you know, hundreds of bird species fly over that little country every year, and they're just trapped and shot, and you end up with thousands of dead birds, and it's really impacting entire species, and that's another kind of mass die-off.
Wow. And are these people that are hunting the birds, like, eating them? Is it, you know, or is it just sport?
Yeah. Well, part of it is sport, but part of it is turned into a local delicacy. You see these jars of you know, if it were fish, they'd be sardines, but it's all these little birds stuffed into a jar in a solution, and they're just eaten whole.
Who decides that something that like that is a delicacy, really? I mean, it doesn't appeal to me on any level. I know I'm not, you know, it's obviously not my culture, but seriously, like, who thinks of these things? Who says monkey brains is a delicacy? Who thought of that?
Well, who's the first person who saw a lobster and said, that looks good?
Yeah, right? I mean,
you know, it all depends on culture, on what type of wildlife you grow up with, what food you have available to you.
Pickling little birds just doesn't seem like right.
Well, it doesn't, but people might have been doing it for centuries, and you can't really criticize them for that.
No, I'll try not to judge. It just so doesn't appeal to me personally. And it upsets me because I happen to love birds. I'm the crazy lady, you know, who sits outside and talks to all the little birds that come around to pick up crumbs that everybody's shooing away. I talk to pigeons. Mm-hmm. I like them all. Sure. I really like them all.
I've got two chickens in my backyard. I go outside and they come up and chat with me.
Oh, I love chickens. I get chicken envy. All my friends are like getting chickens, and I get chicken envy because I think they're really cool.
They're surprisingly fun.
Well, is there any other news about birds in the extinction world that we should know about?
Well, one of my favorite stories that I've covered recently, I wrote about this for Audubon. There's this little tiny bird in Hawaii called the Akikiki. And not many people know it exists. It's tremendously endangered. But a few months ago, a science teacher in India, as part of a school project to teach his kids about endangered species, used the Akikiki as an example, and all the kids just went crazy for it. They loved it. They thought it was fabulous. So he said, well, what can we do to bring more attention to it? So he wrote to the International Astronomical Union and said, can we name a celestial body after this Hawaiian bird? Mm-hmm. And now an asteroid is known, it used to be known as asteroid 7613. Now it's known as asteroid Akikiki. And there it is, immortalized in space. It'll be floating out there forever. And it's another way to call attention to these endangered species here on Earth. And hopefully the birds will be there as long as the asteroid will.
I love that story. That is so cool. Akikiki. Yeah, and it's just interesting, and hopefully it will get the attention of kids and other people like, oh, okay. Why did they name it that? Because it's a beautiful little bird that's, you know, on the endangered species list.
It's just a tremendous thing. And the funny thing is even the people who are in charge of conserving this species, who are doing great things, didn't know this was happening.
Aww.
I heard about it. I called them up. Hey, what's your comment? They said, what? There's an asteroid? And they thought it was the greatest thing in the world because they, you know, how do you get the world to pay attention to this little bird that lives on the top of a couple of mountains in Hawaii that no one ever sees? It's all on state land. You can't visit it. You can't really see it. So how do you get people to know? Well, bingo, we got a solution coming out of India to call attention to this Hawaiian bird. It's just a great example of people working together and caring and doing things outside the box.
So cool. Well, John, as always, you come with – usually there's good news involved, which is very comforting and good. So, you know, we got to pay attention. There's stuff that needs to be done. Please go read some of John's articles to learn more. We will post something about, around our podcast and link back to them. But go look up John Platt, John R. Platt, in Extinction Countdown.
Yep.
Thanks so much, John. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks. I look forward to it.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Green Divas Heart Wildlife. Please visit thegreendivas.com, that's THE, greendivas.com, to learn more about wildlife, nature, and a whole lot more. Where are you headed on your next trip? Have you considered the environmental impact of your adventure? Listen to the Travelin' Green Divas to get tips for healthy, safe, and eco-friendly travels. Another Travelin' Green Divas with the beautiful Alice Ford, actress, stunt woman, TV personality, and she has her own series on YouTube called Alice's Adventures and also Green and Fabulous.
That's right. Great to be here.
She's so green and fabulous and cute. And so we're talking, I think today we're going to talk about some green hotels and some recommendations and probably some surprises, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the eco-hotel whole world is growing a lot, and they say that it's actually the fastest growing segment in the whole travel section is the environmental kind of eco-travel section.
And is that because people are demanding it more, or they want to appear more green, or do they really care?
You know, I think in the research that I've seen, I think that hasn't really been decided yet. They say that about 65% of Americans and Europeans are interested in hotels and destinations that cater to, you know, eco.
Earth-friendly.
Yeah, earth-friendly stuff and eco destinations, eco tours, things like that. But I don't know that they've really decided whether or not people are searching for those things, or if they're just saying, yeah, hey, if a hotel says they do that, that's great. I might, you know, give them an extra star on my rating.
Right.
But
cool.
But I guess as far as that goes, there are a ton of hotels out there that are green now, and that are working hard to change a lot of the practices that they have.
Because of course they've got to be pretty energy intensive and all that laundry.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a gajillion rating systems these days.
Yes.
But I think the ones that are the best and that have the most hotels, there's one called Green Key. Audubon Society has one also.
Do they? I didn't know that.
Yeah, they do. And then also Energy Star has one.
I didn't know that.
And then I think a lot of people are also familiar with LEED.
Yes, right.
Which they don't necessarily rate, you know, the practices that you do, but they do the buildings, you know. So
there's something to be said for that, too.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of hotels and a lot of businesses now are trying to become LEED certified as you know, changing their practices. But I guess as far as highlighting a few hotels, you know, we're here in the New York area.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of great green hotels here in the New York area. One is the Intercontinental Barclay of New York.
And that's a fancy pants place.
It is a fancy pants. There's a lot of, surprisingly, there's a lot of fancy pants hotels that have these amazing green features. That one, for instance, has a bee colony on the roof.
That is just the coolest thing.
It is super cool.
Yeah, I love that. I really like that.
Absolutely. And they also buy all their power from a renewable energy source. Which is also a great thing that people are even able to do that.
Yeah.
You know, so.
And I know that there are a lot of hotels that are trying to buy local food, organic food, and they're trying to do farm to table, which, you know. That helps.
It does. It helps. And it helps, you know, the local community.
Yeah.
And if you're helping the local community, then you're doing something good for the environment.
I like that.
There's even green hotels in Las Vegas, of all places.
Really? Sin City, huh?
That's right. The Palazzo, which is connected to the Venetian. They're a green certified hotel.
I've stayed there.
They're even a LEED building.
But I haven't stayed there in a long, long time. So that's probably new.
You know, they've done a lot of new things. They have in-room occupancy controls, which actually don't allow the power to be on unless you're in the room and your key is in the door. So if you leave the room, all of the electricity turns off, and so they save a lot of energy.
Does it turn into a little sauna while you're gone? I mean, it's hot out there.
It is hot out there. It doesn't. Okay. And I don't know if the temperature must regulate between a certain degree.
Right, there might be a general setting for temperature, because otherwise that can get hot.
Yeah. And everything is on sensors in there, even the curtains. Everything is electric.
Really? Oh, yeah. That's kind of fancy.
Which is pretty fancy.
You know, I just want to mention a place that I stayed in up in. It's a historic hotel in Kennebunkport called, oh my God, I can't think of it. And I did a whole thing on it. But they actually had middle school kids come in every summer or every winter, because the place closes in the winter. They would come in and design a room from top to bottom with eco-friendly products, non-VOC paints.
Really cool.
They use bamboo floors and organic materials, and they do a lot of upcycled things where they'll make a table or a side table out of some garbage they found.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it is really cool. And now they have, and I've got to think of the name of it. It's an interesting name too. Now they have like at least a dozen of these rooms. So every year they add one or two more rooms.
Wow.
So they're working with the kids in the community to teach them about these things, and the kids get to be creative. So I'm like, wow, that is so. And really, by the end of this thing, I'll have figured out. You talk for a minute. I'm going to go look for the name.
Okay.
I can't believe it. I'm so embarrassed.
Well, I'll highlight one more hotel then. You know, I got to spend this past summer in Vancouver, and one of their five-star hotels there, the Fairmont, which is right by the...
Well, tell everybody why you were in Vancouver, because it's so cool.
I was in Vancouver working on Star Trek III, and I do stunts. I know that we've mentioned that before. So pretty awesome, you know, getting work on some big movies. But going back to hotels, the Fairmont there is gold certified, you know, so they do a lot for being, you know, a green hotel. And one of the cool things about them is if you're a Fairmont member, you actually get a free bike for the week or however many days you're there. Yeah, to explore the city in.
That is really cool.
They give you like a yellow bike and you can go... You know.
Okay, I finally got the name. Sorry, okay. you had to vamp for me while I got that. Nonantum.
Oh, okay.
Which is actually, it's a pretty big resort. But anyway, I had to give them a little shout out. So
yeah, absolutely.
Carry on with
and
Vancouver.
I guess if people are wondering how they can find green certified hotels, in February they can go to my website.
That's very exciting. I can't wait to go there.
Yeah. And until then, if you actually go on the Nature Conservancy website, they have some links that you can find some green hotels on there, too.
Now, I cut you off when you were talking about Vancouver. I apologize.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so the Fairmont there, five stars. They give you free bikes. They have, you know, sustainable farm-to-table restaurants. All the food is brought in local.
Of course, Vancouver's so cool, right?
And Vancouver's so green. And literally, like, you know, a block away is a free shuttle to go hiking, you know. So there's just so many things there that you can do.
And then they've got that hot new prime minister, baby Trudeau.
Oh, that's right.
Who's all about the green thing.
Well, it's funny because when I was there, you know, everyone was saying they didn't want him elected. But
really?
You know.
It really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But who knows? I don't
know. It's a whole other segment.
But yes.
So, all right. So you've given us some ideas, some specific things and places that you can visit if you happen to be in Kennebunkport, Maine, or Vancouver, or New York City. But
that's
there
right.
are so many more. And I know if people go to your website and your YouTube channel, tell us your website again.
My website is alicesadventuresonearth.com. And my YouTube channel, if you search Alice Ford, you can find me on there. And then you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever else you want, just using my name.
Yeah, because, you know, she's just constantly got all kinds of cool stuff going on, and you'll get more recommendations.
That's right.
Check it out. Thanks, Alice.
Whether you're off to a tropical getaway or traveling for business, make sure to check the Traveling Green Divas on thegreendivas.com. For more tips and ideas for healthy, safe, and eco-friendly adventures.
Being green can be so sexy. Well, at least you can be sexy and keep it green.
Check out the Green Divas Eco Sexy Podcast for ways to keep it green in the bedroom or wherever you like to have sex.
Well, aren't we excited to, well, almost literally, to talk to Brigitte Mars again. Hi, Brigitte.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on your show.
Brigitte, by the way, is an herbalist. She's an author. She's a university professor, but she's also specifically the author of The Sexual Herbal. And this is sort of an ongoing series. We're talking with her about healthy, natural sex fun.
Absolutely. Well, and last time we did a show, we talked about foods for sexuality.
Yes.
But, you know, there's also a wonderful tradition around the world of using botanicals and plants. And in days gone by, people referred to them as love potions.
Love potions.
And, but, you know, we can tap into this ancient wisdom. So it's funny, a lot of the plants that were once considered love potions are actually now being researched and found to be bona fide plants that can help enhance libido.
Right, so they're not just, you know, wives' tales or whatever.
Well, I think the truth is that the wives' tales were indeed wise.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, they do tend to now more and more turn out to be proven, which I always like.
And, of course, you know, herbal medicine is something that has been time-tested, used by millions of people for thousands of years, and when we look at the plethora of drugs that are just introduced and put on TV ads, and a lot of times you say, well, how long have people been using this? And
yeah, right.
When people try a drug, you know, I remember when Viagra was first introduced, I thought, I wonder how long before, you know, people start having problems taking this drug. I mean, in some respects, our libido diminishing might be a way of trying to conserve our health because it may be that, you know, that's just too much excitement for someone.
Well, isn't there a Tao tradition in Chinese medicine about reducing, for a male anyway, for reducing emissions, if you will, as they get older?
Absolutely, because it, you know, requires a lot of energy to make all of those little swimming seeds, and rather than treating it like a waste product,
right.
It's actually, you know, contains a lot of nutrition, and, you know, the body has to make that. So it's not just a waste product to get rid of. So, you know, we're not going to attempt to teach the art of tantric love here on the radio today,
but
that is something that couples may want to explore, the art of bringing the energy up. And it is a technique that can be learned.
Oh, I think that is a whole nother segment, and we will definitely get there at some point.
Okay. So, but I remember as a teenager, I went to an all-girls school, and I found a book in the library. I found two books in the library, the Kama Sutra and the Perfume Garden.
Ooh.
And I don't remember that much about those books, but I remember that there were all these recipes and ideas of what one could eat. And I know my mom is not going to be listening to this show, so I want to say that my mom once said to me, your father and I only make love when we go on vacation. And I thought, but you only go on vacation like once a year.
Aww.
And I had read in the Perfume Garden that using lots of cinnamon would be good for libido. So I was home from vacation, for vacation, and I said, let me make all the food this week. And I made everything with cinnamon rice pudding and
cinnamon, cute.
You know, French toast and rice pudding with cinnamon. And I just really went all out. And I remember at the end of the week, my mom winked at me and said, it's working. And so that really increased my belief that, like, wow, I need to keep learning about these herbs because here I am at the, you know, young age of 15, and I'm actually helping my parents' joy and bliss.
That's so great. I love that story.
But in thank you. But in general, a lot of the culinary spices can spice up your love life. And so not only things like cinnamon, but ginger and cardamom, a lot of these are herbs that we might enjoy even in things like chai tea.
Right, right.
However, you know, chai tea also has caffeine and sugar and milk in it, so you can make it without all those things as well.
Yes.
But just simply spicing up your food is a way to turn on your senses. Cayenne pepper, curry, chili powder. And in general, all of these spices are warming. circulation.
Right.
So we really want to have optimal, good circulation to the genitals and the entire body in order to have healthy libido. But as you mentioned, you know, in the Taoist technique, there are also herbs that are used in Asian medicine that can be helpful. And again, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You can go to any natural food store and ask for products. What do you have for women's libido? What do you have for men's libido?
Right.
And you'll often find common herbs. So one of them is known as Epimedium, and it also has a little folk name that's kind of cute called horny goat weed.
Well, of course.
And it was found that after observation that goats, they eat this herb and they become more sexually active. And we know that horny goat weed or Epimedium is a circulatory stimulant. It helps to stimulate sperm production and motility and testosterone production.
Huh.
It also strengthens the adrenal glands, and it's a traditional remedy for erectile dysfunction.
Well, there you go.
So
natural
again,
Viagra.
There have been a lot of herbs, and again, you know, do you want to take a drug that's been out on the market for, you know, maybe a couple decades now,
right.
But or do you want to use something that is encouraging farming, you know, supporting farmers, keeping the planet green? I'm always going to go for
yeah.
the natural thing first.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, that is one herb to think about. And then another one is maca.
Yes.
And maca, Lepidium peruvianum, is actually a member of the same family that turnips and rutabagas are in.
Really?
And it actually looks a lot like a rutabaga. It's a root, and it's native to South America. And the name maca is a Quechua term. And maca is an aphrodisiac and a rejuvenative and an adaptogen. And it was observed by the Spanish conquistadors that their horses were not really reproducing when they got to the high Andes mountains. And so the Quechua Indians said, well, bring them up here and we'll show them a plant that they can eat that will help to increase their fertility and, of course, their libido.
Right.
And that herb was maca. And so we know that maca is good for things like vaginal dryness, erectile dysfunction, but it's also good for adrenal exhaustion, chronic fatigue, infertility, low sperm count, memory loss. It helps
wow.
menopausal symptoms like hot flashes
yeah,
and night sweats.
I take maca, an organic maca powder. I put it in my smoothie every morning.
And because it is a close relative of turnip, I think that taking it like a food
yeah.
in a smoothie the way that you're doing, Megan, is really ideal
yeah.
Because you'd have to take a lot of capsules, and it's so safe.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's another good one to know about.
Wow, and you're going to do a post for us because we have to wrap this up now, and it sounds like there's so many wonderful things, and I'm really looking forward to learning more.
Okay, well, I'm going to send you something, so thank you so much.
Thanks, Brigitte. Until next time.
Many blessings.
Turned on yet? Well, go to thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com, to learn more about this Green Divas eco-sexy podcast and find other low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green.
Showed up on the land of other people. Contaminate the ocean, now the water is lethal. 4 bucks for 2 liters, that should be illegal. Amigo, Evo, Contigo, can't even find Nemo. The water used to be see-through. Wish weapons was food, then we all be feared. I wish narcotics was fruit. I got them apples in red, the nemesis since Genesis. When the water starts to kill the fish, that's when you know how ill it is.
still it is, they do the unthinkable. Water same color as tea that's still deemed drinkable. Survival of the fit, how we was brought up but never taught us prepare for World War I.
Well, it is a distinct honor today to have with me, on the air at least, the Rev Yearwood, who is the president and CEO of Hip Hop Caucus. If you haven't heard of Rev Yearwood, get out there, look him up, follow him on Twitter. He's a community activist. He's a minister, but he's really kicking up some good stuff and getting people motivated to get more involved, and especially the hip-hop generation, which is, it's really great to see the activity and the people coming together. So, hi, Rev Yearwood.
How are you?
I am great, and I was so inspired because one of the things that I think you're involved with is the peoplesclimatemusic.com.
That's correct.
And there's a really, really good tune there called Trouble in the Water, and it's great music, and it's telling a hard story about what's really happening out there. I think it was, you know, designed to activate people after the Michigan water issues, right?
It was, but it's you know, the story was, that song was written at the apex of when the Flint water crisis catastrophe was happening. Right. When Common wrote that, he wrote that song in 2014, actually the same time he was writing Glory, which he won an Academy Award for.
Right.
And so he wrote both songs almost in a very prophetic way.
Yep.
And kind of telling about all the water problems and water infrastructure problems and climate change. And, you know, we have to do better regarding our water systems. You know, we've actually, it's funny, in 1977, many, many, many moons ago, we used to spend close to almost $78 per person per water system.
Wow.
Now we've dropped by almost 82%. But we're spending under $14 per person, which was part of the problem with the Flint water crisis, because the water system was so outdated and so bad.
So they're,
led to the poisoning.
They're cheaping out on people and people's
health.
You would think
when inflation would go up, right? Because you know, houses definitely and cars were less than would have gone up. But that has gone down, and so I think that's. And that song, and you're right, art and activism go so well together. And Common using his platform, when he did that video, Trouble in the Water, and yes, your listeners can go watch it at peoplesclimatemusic.com. When he did that video, it was released on Earth Day.
Yeah.
And in 72 hours, it had over 1 million views on Facebook, passionate people around this issue.
I can see why, and it's really good to see, you know, younger people getting activated. Now, you also, one of the reasons we connected to make this call happen today, it was I saw that you had this little Twitter war with Squawk Box dude Joe Kernan, and I just wanted to ask about that and see how that was progressing, and you know, tell folks what happened there.
Yeah, well, you know, in hip hop is kind of used to Twitter wars or Twitter beef, so I mean, I guess I kind of feel bad because my Twitter beef was with Joe Kernan from Squat Box, so I guess I'm not so hard as the other ones in hip hop. Mm-hmm. You're back and forth with Joe Kernan, but the issue was hard, and the topic we were discussing is one in which I simply was discussing about climate change is real,
yeah,
and that 97% of all scientists agree with that.
Yeah.
And you know, Joe, who has this amazing platform on Squat Box on CNBC, decided to just go back at me to denounce, you know, climate change and say that it's not real and poke funds because I guess Leo took a plane someplace.
Yeah.
And that meant he was a hypocrite, and this back and forth and back and forth. So it just, what's unfortunate, I'll say this, is that, you know, Joe Kernan actually has a degree from MIT in science, and it just shows. He does, but it shows the grip of the fossil fuel industry, and it shows how much they are doing, like tobacco, right?
Yeah.
Like tobacco, how much they would do anything for even those who know better to really keep us just locked in the fossil fuel so we don't transition to clean energy. And that's unfortunate, because if it were just tobacco, cancer is very serious. And people are getting cancer from pollution. But literally, when you now have farmers in India who are committing suicide because it's so hot, or in children in India who are actually drowning themselves because of the heat, this is no longer a game. And I think that like the BBC did, when they really stopped folks who are climate deniers from being on the air, it may be time for CNBC to take a look at that same process as well.
Yeah, or at least help balance it by amplifying the voice of reality, at least.
I agree. I'm waiting for the invitation. I mean, you know, I would love, and we could talk about the how the fossil fuel-free portfolios are doing so much better than fossil fuel portfolios. So we can discuss that aspect of it as well. We can talk about why the divestment movement is growing, that we've had over almost $3.4 trillion divested from fossil fuels, and how people are really getting away from coal and gas and oil and moving to renewables. So I would love to have that conversation.
Yeah, well, I'd like to see that conversation, so I'm on board. I'm gonna actually tweet him from the Green Divas account later and pester him about making sure to get you on there. I mean, but you have a platform that's wonderful and growing fast, and you know, you don't necessarily need them, but it's nice to have a voice everywhere. So while we're talking about that, I know you're probably gearing up for this election. I know there's already been a lot going on, but we're narrowing the field at this point. Can I get your take on what is happening with our political system?
Yeah, you know, I'm a big democracy person. It's one of the reasons I got into this work. And I was a former Air Force officer. And for me, you know, willing to die for this country, you know, really wanting to see my community engage in the process. And so I began to work with the hip-hop community, because I also don't think I should take myself so seriously all the time. We should have fun. We should have fun with this. We should have fun and get out to vote and be amongst young people. And so we actually started voting campaigns about 12 years ago. They've been extremely successful, award-winning in some cases. And so we've been out there in the our main campaign is called Respect My Vote. And that campaign works to really getting young people of color, engaged, not only in the political process, but to discuss issues about voting, democracy, voter protection, about policies that can allow people to register to vote through your driver's license. Just a lot of different ways. And so we've been doing that now for some time. And, you know, this season, it's a little hurtful because, you know, a lot of young people are excited for candidates here and there, but still there's a sense where they recognize how important this election is.
Yeah.
They realize, like, our parents, you know, our parents fought for equality in the 20th century. But we're now fighting for existence in the 21st century. It's real serious. And I think that we understand that we need to have leadership who understands that climate change is real, and the impacts of that, and move our world further along so that we can begin to fix it. It's already, we're already at a place where there's already going to be some damage, but we can still fix it. We need leaders in place who understand that we're still fixing racial issues in this country and abroad.
Yes.
And I think that, and we're still in a place where women don't make as much money as men. People are still being judged by their gender, you know, being tackled in bathrooms and all kind of stuff. So,
crazy.
I mean, we got a ways to go. And I think the only way to ensure that people's voices can be heard is by the ballot box.
I'd like to think so. I'd like to think so. I think there are some essential, you know, we're just so broken. You know, the system has been so broken, but I think that there is a revolution possible if we really get out the vote and really make sure our voices are heard. There has been over the years a lot of apathy with young people who think, yeah, I'll deal with that later. That's not really my thing. I don't – whatever. And then I've heard a lot of young people talk about, like, Bernie Sanders. They're super, super – Bernie, like Bernie or bust, nothing else will satisfy. And if Bernie doesn't get the nomination, they're not going to vote at all. And I said, no, you can't do that. What you got to do is make the candidates that are there better, hold their feet to the fire.
That's key. And that's why it's almost as important as November 9th, the day after Election Day, as it is November 8th. Yeah. And I think you're right about that. And I think, you know, listen, I've been around long enough when it was, you know, it was Gore bust. It was, you know, yeah. It was, you know, Obama bust. it's Bernie bust. So we've had a number of that. But I think that young people have shown, I think what they really want is a transparent government. They want a government that really cares about them. And where their voices can be taken seriously, not just when you show up in October and November for a vote, but they can be part of the policymaking process.
Well, I know that we've been talking with Greenpeace, who has kind of, for the first time, gotten involved in something other than just environmental and social action. And they have a campaign called Fix Democracy. And one of their things is they're asking all the candidates to stop taking fossil fuel money. Now, that's just one thing. I think in general, and this is just my personal opinion, I'm on a little rant, sorry, that we need to get a lot of this corporate money. Citizens United has to go away. The government needs to be generated by the people, not by corporations. And I think that's – we'll all feel a lot more properly invested when we know that our votes actually do count.
No, I agree. I love Greenpeace. One of their organizers back in the day was a really good friend of mine named Damo Smith. He passed away. Mm. He was an African-American who kind of really combined things. And what he did was that he did what Greenpeace is doing now, is that he broke silos. And sometimes the progressive movement can operate in silos, where you're operating where, you know, money and politics is in this silo, climate change is in this silo, civil rights is in this silo. And I think what Greenpeace is doing, what we're doing, Hip Hop Caucus, is that we're trying to break down these silos so that, you know, where there's a fusion, a justice fusion network, where clearly things that affect other things, clearly money and politics have a huge impact on fossil fuels and us transitioning to clean energy. So we got to deal with that. And the same thing with issues of pollution. What's going on in Flint, pollution and poverty has an impact as well. So I think that what you're now beginning to see is a much more climate justice kind of fusion point of view. I think, and that's so exciting to see. We haven't gotten, it's still a long way. A lot of our groups are not quite there yet. And I think that they're watching and they're kind of on the fence and they're moving, but we got to move faster to really create a much more fusion network that breaks down silos and begins to attack everywhere there's injustice.
Well, I really love that. I love that. It's an optimistic and encouraging concept, and I do see it. I see that the silos are breaking down, and we all see that we just have no choice but to band together, because if we are up against corporate America, then we really have to all congregate and make it happen.
we do, and I tell a lot of young folks, I said, you know, we're up against corporate America, and you know, there's some parts of corporate America that's not bad, but when corporate America puts profits before people, it becomes a huge problem, and the greed, and they begin to just, you know, skirt regulation, and they begin to hurt people. That's a problem. And I think that what's different is, again, you know, our parents, you know, came together and were much more visible. So I say to those who are in the equality movement, hey, you know, our parents fought against, you know, Jim Crow, but we are fighting against a much more sophisticated enemy. His son, I like to call James Crow Jr. Esquire. And James is a little bit more sophisticated than his old man. He might not come outside and camp you marching the streets or whatever, but James will sit back and, you know, drink his latte in his boardroom and will shape policy like Citizens United that will affect our community.
Well, I don't know. I mean, call me crazy. I think some of what Obama has been up against in his two administrations is a wall of racism that nobody will admit to. You know, nobody wants
to
admit.
Crazy.
You
know, that's exactly it.
People don't want to admit that's what it is, but he's being stonewalled by a bunch of, you know, old white guys that don't want to get called out for being racist.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. But on the flip side, there's a beautiful generation that's emerging.
Yes.
That is black, white, brown, yellow, male, female, straight, gay, human, young people rising up. And I think that, not that I want people who are older, who are in their 60s or 70s to die, but I am saying that there is a new generation that is coming up, that sees rhetoric and hears rhetoric and saying that, you know, we can be better. Yeah. And I think that's what's good. And I think that, you know, we have a long way to go, but I think this next generation can really make our world a better place.
All right. Well, I'm going to say that I'm not probably your target demographic, but I am a real devotee now of Hip Hop Caucus. I'm following you guys. I'm supporting you guys.
I love it.
And,
I love it.
So if you take this, like, token Green Diva, and I'm hoping that we'll get to talk to you again soon, and as things progress and whenever there's good news, because we need some of that too, right?
No, please. And listen, I love all the divas, and definitely ones that are green are my favorite. So you are definitely Hip Hop Caucus all the way.
Thank you so much for taking time with us today.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to the Green Divas Radio Show. Be sure to look for this and other Green Diva Network podcasts on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, iTunes, Swell Radio, and Spreaker. Get social with the Green Divas on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Subscribe to the Green Divas YouTube channel to watch them in action. And for all the latest good green news, visit thegreendivas.com. That's THE greendivas.com.